You're listening to the Brian Keane Fitness Podcast, where Irish fitness entrepreneur Brian Keane answers your questions and interviews leaders in the world of fitness, health, mindset, and natural wellness. Come join the fun.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to another episode of the podcast. This is another one of these episodes where I'm supposed to be doing something else, but I think I drank too much coffee and now I feel the need to talk. It's happened a couple of times. I did a recent episode late last month, November, my hatred for running episode, which effectively was a three-question Q&A that I tied together and made a full mindset episode. It actually got a ridiculous amount of downloads. It's very heavy on the mindset. It's actually probably one of my favorite episodes I've recorded this year. So if you haven't listened to that, check that one out, 191. That came off the back of just having too much coffee and I couldn't sit down and write. I have a process for writing. So I'm in the, again, as I mentioned, in the process of writing my third book at the minute. And I have a kind of months on, months off approach because it allows me to look at things from a fresh perspective. And I read it in Stephen King's book on writing, where he talks about killing your darlings, which is what I try and apply when I'm writing books myself, where I'll write a massive amount, then leave it for a few months and then come back to it with fresh eyes. And then you can effectively delete things that aren't going to help as many people. I did the same thing with the fitness mindset. My first book, I did the same thing with GA Leaner, Stronger, Faster. My second book, and I'll be doing the same with the third one. But today is one of those days that I'm supposed to be looking over that book and editing it and working on the second draft ahead of next year. But nope, just drank too much coffee. I have an espresso machine, which I probably shouldn't have bought. And I pressed it a third time today, which means that I got a third hit of coffee or caffeine. That's too much. So I'm going to record a New Things I Learned This Year episode instead, just to close out the end of year podcast. The last one before 2019. I've got a couple of the episodes recorded already for early January 19. Some amazing guests coming up. I've also got a couple that I haven't locked in just yet in terms of dates, but over February and March, I'm going to try and get a lot of them done before I go to the Arctic Circle in February. So for those of you new to the podcast, I'm running 230 kilometers, five back-to-back consecutive days through the Arctic Circle in -3 to -30 conditions. So I'm going to try and get a lot of those podcasts done beforehand. So while I'm gone that week or 10 days, the podcast will be coming out as normal. So yeah, I'm really excited for that. And if you're first time listening, welcome to the podcast. If you're a long time listener, then you're a legend and I love you already. So there's nothing else I need to say. But today's episode, I'm going to focus on a bit of a reflection one on things that I've learned this year. So over this past year, I've learned a lot of, particularly from the fitness side of things, because I've gone away from my normal style of training. And particularly from January 2018, I started running more. And with that came a lot of experimentation with the style of dieting that I've been doing, different heat stresses that I've been applying. And again, it was all kind of leading into April, which was when I ran Marathon de Sable. So six back-to-back marathons in the Sahara Desert. And I learned a lot from the physical standpoint of how my body responded, the mental health standpoint in terms of how amazingly good I feel when I do certain training regimens or certain heat stress responses that I'm going to talk about today. So I'm just basically going to do a bit of a reflection episode on the year. So the things that I learned, particularly new things, because these weren't necessarily things that I held very strongly before I started experimenting with running and experimenting with getting myself ready to run through the Sahara. So a little bit of a focus on that. I'm going to make it very applicable to anybody here that's either looking to lose body fat, build muscle, improve, you know, their mood, improve their physical health, improve their physical body composition. I'm going to make it very applicable because, well, I say that now, like I've got a couple of notes. I've got like four notes in front of me and then I'll expand on it. So it could go in any direction. So I'm pre-warning you, it's going to be one of those episodes, like caffeine infused random tangents. So I'm just going to preface with it. So if you're like, fuck this, I'm not listening to this anymore, you can turn it off now. But yeah, otherwise, enjoy. So the first thing I learned was intermittent fasting makes me feel great. And I'm going to expand on this one for to try and provide value to everybody listening. And intermittent fasting is basically just time-restricted eating. It's where you're fasting intermittently to give your body give your digestive system a chance to recover. And the reason I've been such a big fan of this is because of the way it makes me feel, more so than body composition. And I struggle to recommend diets to people without knowing the context of what they've done up to this point, without knowing the training program they are on, or without knowing what the end goal is. But intermittent fasting definitely has made me feel significantly better. And I only started experimenting with it because of the food restriction that I was going to have in the Sahara. So I knew when January came around and I was running, going to be running in April, that I wasn't going to have to the luxury of having as much food as I wanted, because it's self-sufficient marathon to Saab. So you have to carry all your food in your back for the 6 days. You're in the desert sleeping there for 8 days, but you're running six back-to-back marathons over 6 days. So I knew that I wasn't going to be able to bring that much food. And I actually ran out of food on the last day. If you listen to, I think it's episode 150 or 151, my review on marathon to Saab when I came back, I actually ran out of food on the last day. Which was a struggle and made it very difficult. But in the lead up to it, I once started training fasted in the morning. So I started doing my runs. I was running 50 to 100 kilometers a week pretty consistently. And I started training fasted, and then I started doing time restricted eating. So just eating within a 10 hour window. And this was kind of a twofold approach. I knew when I got out to the desert, I wasn't going to be doing that. I was going to be eating much more regularly to try and fuel my body. But I also wanted to condition my body to become more fat adapted, which basically means that my body's efficient at using fat as a fuel source, either dietary fat or body fat that I've stored on my body, as opposed to being glycolic or glucose or glycogen based, which is very much carbohydrate dependent. So training fasted in the morning, I would do 20, 30 or 40 minutes with hypertrophy or hypertrophy, a circuit workout generally, very similar to what I'm doing now in the Arctic Circle training, where I would do my actual real weight workout, but more high intensity, more circuit based, to try and deplete glycogen and just get my body into a state where when I start to do a long run, 10, 15, 20 kilometers, that my body was using fat as a fuel source and it was making it a bit more fat adapted. So what I did over the last year was I try to make myself more metabolically flexible, which means that my body can use glucose or carbohydrate, or it can use fat as a fuel source interchangeably. So I don't feel as fatigued and I don't hit the wall or bonk, which is what happens with a lot of runners or a lot of people that train and their blood sugar levels drop. And that metabolic flexibility has really, really helped. But the intermittent fasting, what I found was my digestion was way better. And my cognitive function, my ability to think was much better when I did time-restricted eating. So it's something I actually kept after Marathon to Saab. And I've been, again, using it, training, going into the Arctic Circle run next year. And I've been using a 10-hour eating window. I've mentioned this briefly on the podcast a couple of times, particularly with guests. But I haven't gone into it too much because for me, my goal right now isn't look. It's not getting on and getting jacked with a load of muscle. It's not getting super lean and ripped. My goal is very much right, cognitive function, endurance, and physical health. So I'm actually a huge fan of time-restricted eating and intermittent fasting for health. And I've spoken on a couple of diet podcasts earlier in the year that it also works quite well for fat loss. And even though when you throw it into the kind of the fad with, do intermittent fasting or do keto, when it's that kind of fad, when you start seeing it in fucking magazines, it's a fad right now. So I always struggle with that side of it because you're coming at it from the wrong reason. When you look at a diet or nutritional strategy from a fad standpoint, you're normally looking at it as a quick fix. And intermittent fasting can work very well for fat loss because you're only eating in a time-restricted window. It makes sense that if you're only eating for 10 hours of the day, you're going to probably eat less food than if you're eating for 16 hours of the day. So it makes it easier to get into a calorie deficit, which means you're eating less calories than your body needs, and you're able to burn body fat as a result. I actually don't like intermittent fasting for bulking up. It's funny because I'm very fortunate or unfortunate, whatever label you want to put on it, my body's ability to maintain muscle mass and build muscle mass. I build muscle very easily. Very short and stocky. I'm 5'8" on a good day. I'm muscle bellies from working on a farm all my life. My body's ability to maintain its muscle mass once I stay within a calorie maintenance or a surplus, I don't struggle to maintain muscle mass at all. But intermittent fasting is something that has allowed me to drop a little bit of muscle, which has been a goal over the last few months, because the less I have to carry weight-wise, the more I can carry on my back through the Arctic Circle, and it will also hopefully help me for Ironman next year, which I've got in June. So again, if you're listening to this, always reverse engineer your nutritional strategy or your diet off what your goals are. And one of the reasons that I don't like sharing my time-restricted eating or intermittent fasting that much on the podcast is because it's very dependent on my specific goals. Your goals may be very different to me. And realistically, you're probably not trying to run 230 kilometers to the Arctic Circle in February. So your diet and training is going to be very different to mine. So I always want to kind of preface with that. But I definitely feel significantly better with intermittent fasting. Do I think it's the best diet for people? Again, context is key. It depends on your goal. All I know is the studies that I've read, and I've been reading a lot of books on either time-restricted eating or fasting, either multi-day fasting or time-restricted eating through the day, which is effectively intermittent fasting, and its improvement on things like autophagy, your body's ability to clear out cancerous cells, your body's ability to improve its immune system, so your immunity is going to be improved and you're not going to get sick as easily, and all the side health benefits that can come from either not eating throughout the day at regular intervals, or the alternative where you're doing multi-day fast, which I haven't experimented with, and I'm sure I will at some stage just to see how my body responds. And then I'll obviously either talk about it on the podcast or I'll blog it on brankeyfitness.com, and you'll be able to read up on that, on what I've experienced. Again, it's always first-hand experience. But again, always work it back off your goals. I personally, with the majority of people I work with, who body composition is the goal or performance. So in my BKF online program, it tends to be body composition. So building muscle, losing body fat, getting leaner. And in my GEA program, it tends to be very sport specific on top of body composition being pyramided as the top of what the goal that we're trying to reverse engineer back from. And I actually way prefer meal timing. So every 3 hours, or breakfast, lunch and dinner with a couple of snacks, I actually prefer that system for the majority of people. But intermittent fasting can also work great. And if health is your number one priority, or fat loss is your number one priority, it can definitely work. And again, I work with people that we do intermittent fasting with them. But again, it always is going to be whatever works best for your schedule, into your lifestyle, and your nutritional strategy needs to be a reflection of what your end goal is. But all I know that I definitely learned this year is intermittent fasting, although maybe a fad in some magazines and papers that you see, definitely makes me feel better. And I'm very impressed with some of the studies that I've read on overall health and longevity. I definitely would check out Rhonda Patrick's work on that. Dr. Sachin Panda's work on that, and the book Fasting by, I think it's Jason Fang, quite a good book on fasting, even though, of course, anyone that writes a nutrition book, it's always going to be heavily biased on what they like, but that one also has a little bit of how to apply it, even if you're not convinced that fasting is the best way for longevity or health, and how to introduce yourself into it and test it out, which is an angle of the book that I quite like. So first thing I learned this year is intermittent fasting makes me feel freaking great. The next one is, and if you've listened to the podcast and this isn't your first episode, that suffering is good. And there's been a trend with a lot of my guests that I've had on in recent months about getting comfortable being uncomfortable. And that if you can live your life in a perpetual state of discomfort and you're doing little things every day that make you feel a little bit more uncomfortable, growth is out the other side. And this is really, I've really doubled down and hammered down on this message over the last few months. And my outlet or angle or external thing that I tie to it is that of running. And if you listen to that episode that I mentioned at the start, 191, which actually the start of the title is my hatred for running, I'm very vocal. If you've listened to the podcast with Tom Otten or Dean Karnassus or Tom Evans, who are all super successful ultramarathon runners, they all love running, and it's their meditation or it's their main outlet. And I'm on the opposite side. I fucking hate running. And the reason I do it is because of the self-discipline that it builds. And for me, it's leaning into something that makes me feel uncomfortable every day, particularly every training day. And it makes me psychologically stronger and makes me a little bit more disciplined doing things that I don't want to do. And I've long held the belief that successful people do the things they have to do, whether they feel like it or not. And running allows me to exercise that muscle, pardon the pun, every day, because I fucking hate to run. And I'm not saying to go out and run, but what I am saying, and a lesson that I learned, is that suffering is a good thing and being uncomfortable is a good thing. And I use the reference point of the gym because I'm someone that loves working out. I love particularly high intensity exercise, weightlifting, anything in that realm I love. Like I'm one of those people that loves the gym. And if you're listening to this, you tend to fall on one side where you're similar to me, where you've learned to love the workout and the pain that you get in the gym and you look forward to doing it. Or you're on the other side where you hate it, but you do it because of the end result. It doesn't really matter what side you fall on, but suffering is good in the sense that I was a bit too comfortable with my training for a couple of years. And when I came off the back of the Worlds, when I did the 2015 WBFF Worlds in Las Vegas, when I was competing as a bodybuilder and as a fitness model, which was kind of the world I was in for a couple of years. When I came off the back of that, I kind of trained just at a leisurely pace. I did a little bit of CrossFit. I did a little bit of high intensity work, and I kind of just trained the way I wanted to train, strength and conditioning, a lot of this kind of work for my GA lean body program, because I like to be able to be functional. And even though my body will hold muscle mass, I like that muscle to be functional muscle. But then when I started to run over the last 18 months now, I started to run in August. So if you're a long time listening to the podcast, when I started training for Marathon de Sable, which is 6 back-to-back marathons, I never ran a marathon in my life. I ran the first marathon ever in Dubai in January of this year to prepare for Marathon de Sable, and it was on road. And I started with 2-kilometer runs in August of 2017. And I started with 2-kilometer runs, nearly got sick at the end of my first workout of 2-kilometer runs. Then I built up to 3, then I went up to 4, then I went up to 5 kilometers until I was up to 10, 15 kilometers at the end of workouts. And then I was running consistently 50 to 100 kilometers by January in preparation for the 6 back-to-back marathons in the desert. But what I learned was that I was getting psychologically a lot stronger from running, because every day I fucking dreaded it. Like if I was running outside, from when I stepped outside the door till I stepped back in, I hated every step. And when I stepped onto the treadmill to do it in the gym until I stepped off the treadmill, I hated every step. But what I found was everything else in my life was starting to get easier. When I would have to sit down and write, when I would have to sit down and do an interview, when I would have to sit down and do a meeting or a consultation, something that was either cognitively challenging or something that, you know, you may not have wanted to do. I'm very fortunate in the position that I'm in that everything that I do for the 80, 90% of the time, I absolutely love doing and would do for free. But it still doesn't change that there's certain things you lean into that you are more comfortable with and will enjoy more, and certain things that you do that you don't enjoy as much. That may be a conversation with a loved one or a spouse or someone in a personal or romantic relationship. That may be a having to do a work task where you're constantly procrastinating it and putting it on the long finger because you just don't want to lean into it. And the thought of it just makes you kind of edgy and anxious. And what I found was my ability to get stuff done was massively enhanced off the back of coming back from Marathon de Sable. And firstly, I thought it was because of the amount of confidence that I came, or the amount of confidence that that event generated, because my reason for signing up, if you're a long-time listener, was that I wasn't sure if I could do it. I had no running background. As I said, I nearly got sick after my first 2-kilometer run. I'd never run a marathon. I'd never done anything multi-day. I'd never ran an ultra marathon. And I was trying to run 6 back-to-back with an 86-kilometer on the Thursday, on the 5th day, through the Sahara, self-sufficient, water-rationed, with food on my back. And I wasn't 100% sure if I could do it. And when I came back from it, I had this massive confidence increase that I could do anything. And all the other limitations that I had started to lift as a result. And I thought that was the reason that I was starting to get more things done. And there was that was part of it, because I came back and I was just so grateful for the things that I had. Like when you're, if you've listened to that episode about the snowstorm on the second night or third night where the tent got blown away and I had to jump on my bag and the hook that was in the tent sliced through one of my tent mate's hands and you weren't sure if you were going to survive it or not. I remember coming back home and having four walls and a roof and a bed and for the first 2 months being like, oh my God, I'm so grateful for this. So my perspective had changed because of the relevant points that I was comparing it to. But that wasn't why I was getting more done. Why I was getting more done was because when I came back, I stopped running for a couple of months. And I found that I was going back into that kind of procrastination. And I'm a king procrastinator. If I left my default mode kick in, I'm really, really bad at procrastinating on things. And even today, like I'm procrastinating on editing the first draft of the book and going back over it with a new eye. But I can rechannel it into a podcast because I probably just drank too much caffeine. And that's my reason for not being able to concentrate. But what happened when I stopped running was those tasks started to get a lot difficult. So I started back running again, you know, started with 5Ks and up to 10Ks and now up to, you know, 15, 20Ks at the end of my workouts every morning when I'm training. And it makes you so much more disciplined because you're doing something, you're if you think of leaning into discomfort and doing things you don't want to do as a muscle, the more you do it, that muscle gets stronger. And running for me is my version of that. It's my version of daily suffering. And yours may not be running. And again, it's hard for me to offer advice directly because everyone's so different on this. But pick something during the day, each day if you can, particularly a training day. It's why I love the gym because it's a metaphor for life. Do something that makes you uncomfortable. And if you love lifting weights, try running on the treadmill for a little bit. If you love swimming, try hopping on a bike and doing that. Do something that makes you uncomfortable every day. I had to do the same thing with reading. When I started reading more physical books, and my introduction came to audiobooks about 6 or 7 years ago, and then I had to start, there were certain books that I really wanted to read, but they weren't available on audio, so I had to read the physical book. And I had told myself for so long, oh, I can't fucking read books, I can't concentrate. Again, all a story and a limitation that I'd created myself that wasn't true, wasn't a fact, it was an opinion. And I started to focus. And first I tried systems where I would do a 15-minute concentrated time and I would do that at multiple intervals during the day. And that worked quite well. And then as I got more into certain topics, I was able to concentrate for longer periods of time. So it was a kind of a mild form of psychological suffering trying to concentrate. But again, now you get better. Like everything. Like I'm a very good reader now. And again, I get through 2-3 books every week, you know, it's consistently. And it comes down to not letting your story dictate it, not letting your own limitation of, oh, I'm not good at this or I can't do that, or that makes me really uncomfortable. Not letting that guide the decision. And when you reframe it that to be successful, and success is subjective, it's whatever it means for you, but I constantly see it coming up either in relationships with people, either with business people who are very successful in their field, fitness people who vary from bodybuilders and bikini girls to Ironman and ultra marathon runners, that suffering is a good thing. And they've conditioned themselves to get comfortable being uncomfortable. And the more they do it, the stronger they get it, and the better they get at it. And how you do anything is how you do everything. So when you get used to doing it in one area of your life, it tends to transcend and work in other areas as well. So over this last year, I've learned that suffering is a good thing. And running in particular, because of my lack of enjoyment for it, but the character and psychological strength that it builds, you know, psychological transformation through physical suffering, it makes me stronger, it makes me more disciplined, and it makes me fucking happier. Like my mental health is the best it's ever been because of, you're going to suffer. I spoke about this in my, if you've been on my YouTube channel, Brian Keane Fitness, I put my Google keynote when I was speaking at Google headquarters on using exercise to combat mental health. And my mental health is the fucking best it's ever been. Anxiety, worry, stress, all these issues that I've dealt with throughout most of my 20s are at the lowest they've ever been. But it comes off the back of controlled suffering. Because if you don't particularly I'm speaking to those people who deal with that. Some of you are listening and going, fuck, I have no issue with that. So just take this with a grain of salt. But everybody else that's listening that has issues with anxiety or worry or stress or is constantly overthinking in their own head, that's suffering. And you can choose how you're going to suffer. The fucking beauty of running or cycling or gym or doing something you don't want to do is it's controlled suffering. And when you do that every day, you don't get that uncontrolled suffering of constant thoughts just running around your head, taking control of your day. And it's made me a lot more rational in my thought processes. I've spoken a lot on the podcast over the last year about making decisions from a rational standpoint as opposed to letting your emotions guide you. And it's a way of making better decisions in most areas of your life. Again, I can't speak for anybody else, but I've made all the shitty bad decisions I've ever made came from an emotional state. It came when I reacted as opposed to being reflective and stepping out of a situation and looking at the big picture and being a lot more rational when making a decision. That goes in every area. But suffering is good. And that controlled suffering allowed me to take back control of it. And again, mental health is something I've spoken on, dealing with mental health, I think episode 176 or 177, one of my most downloaded episodes of the year, that spoke about taking control of it. And when you own it, you can control it. And when you control it, you can change it. But suffering is a good thing. So pick something every day. It might be reading. It might be running. It might be the gym. It might be just having conversations where you're not working away from conflict avoidance because you don't want to have a conversation with somebody. Lean into that every day or at least 5 days a week, particularly if it's training wise, and lean into it because your life will be better as a result and you will feel better if you get comfortable with being uncomfortable. So the next one I learned, and I wasn't going to include this one, but I've decided to include it just in case it lands and resonates, is that work really doesn't feel like work when you get a few things right. And I've been preaching this, preach is a strong word. I've been talking about this for, I think since I started the podcast in 2016, that when you do things that you love, you never really feel like you're working. But this has really hammered in over the last year. And I've had a fantastic year in terms of business, the amount of people I've got to work with, my kind of ventures into business and into speaking and into seminars and corporate talks, all things that I love. And I'm very fortunate with the position I'm in. But it only works that way when you get very clear on what your end goal is. And one of my favorite quotes comes from Abraham Lincoln, where he says that, I'm going to work and kind of paraphrase it, but his quote is that you learn something from everybody you meet, even if it's what not to do. And just to cut out that last bit, you learn something from everybody you meet. And as I spent a lot of this year working with people on their business, particularly fitness businesses, and working in consultations, either full day consultations or people that are coming to my business seminars, it made me see that all the mistakes that people were making, and when I say mistakes, doing things that weren't in alignment with the end goal, were nearly the same across the board, where people have an end goal and they're actively taking steps that are moving them further away from that end goal. And the people that were doing well, because I've worked with some very successful fitness, either people running personal training businesses or running gyms or in the fitness industry in general, and success leaves clues. The people that were doing the best were the ones that were very clear on their end goal and were working backwards from that. And I'm going to branch this one out, because when I say work, it doesn't really be, it's not fully narrowed down to just actual job and daily work, your 9 to 5, Monday to Friday. It also applies for nearly everything that you do in your life, that when you get a few things right, it doesn't really feel like work. And in the context of your fitness, if you've listened to the podcast, you know that I've frequently used a quote, one of my favorite quotes from Buddha that I brain tattooed, is you're not going to be happy at a destination if you're not happy on the journey, which means that if you don't enjoy the process, you're not going to be able to stick to it long term. And I always say that when it comes to nutrition and diet and training. It's why I'm so anti fad diets and, you know, 6 minute abs and 6 weeks to lose 6 stone, all the quick fix stuff that gets sold or gets marketed to people, because it's not the long-term solution. Like, if you can lose 6 stone in 6 weeks, you ain't keeping that fucking 6 stone off. Like, that's just the reality of the situation. It's the reality, with the exception of, you know, a complete outsider or outlier, the majority of people are going to bounce back because you haven't put the correct habits in place. You haven't had the physiological response over a period of time where your hormones and body can actually compensate or support you on the weight loss journey or muscle building journey or whatever it is. Like, it's taking a shortcut and you're robbing happiness from tomorrow to pay for it today. And again, it means that you might lose your weight or, you know, look a certain way right now. But if you had to take this super strong fat burner or this fad diet or this hormone or whatever it is to do it, you're robbing from tomorrow. Because yes, you might look great today, but in 2, 3, 4 weeks time, when your body rebounds back, you're going to have a whole other host of problems to deal with in terms of the rebound, the psychological suffering that can come from that, the hormonal imbalances that can come from that. But when you get a few things right, it never feels like work. So in the context of fitness, get your nutrition dialed in. A nutritional strategy that works for you with foods you enjoy in a calorie deficit, maintenance, or surplus, depending on what your goals are. Doing a training program that you can stick to consistently, that's in alignment with the end goal, getting bigger, getting stronger, getting faster, getting leaner, whatever that is. In the context of work, then, it's being very clear on what you want your perfect day to look like. And this is something I've covered in my business seminars. I actually touched on this a little bit in my fitness seminars as well, that to get your perfect day right is such a simple concept, but there's genius in its simplicity, because your days fall into weeks, your weeks fall into months, and your months fall into years. And people are always like, oh yeah, I want to be more fulfilled, or I want to feel better and have a great life, etc., which is what we all want, we all strive for, and we all desire. And again, I'm generalizing massively, so that may not be true. It's what I desire. But it starts with focusing on the smallest component part. And that's getting your day right. And when you get your work day right, or your life in general, the people you're around, your inner circle, the people you're spending the most time with, when you get these things right, it never really feels like you're putting in the efforts that you are. And Steve Jobs, who owned Apple before he died, great book by Walter Isaacson on Steve Jobs, spoke a lot about his envision of the iPod and the iPhone, and that he used to work ridiculous hours, but it never felt like work. And he used to always say that you have to be a little bit crazy to do well in business, because any sane person, if they didn't love what they do, would have given up years ago. And that's kind of how it feels. And I've given you a little bit of insight into my life, just to use it as context to hopefully tie the whole theory together. One of the reasons I've been very, very fortunate in the life that I have, the living that I make. I get to do what I do, impact the people I get to impact with, work with the people I get to work with. And there's so many things in my day that I do that I'm like, I can't believe I get to do this. And that comes off the back of making very conscious decisions on where I want to go and saying no to everything that doesn't support that end goal. One of the things in the areas that I struggled with, and I've spoken on this in the podcast in the past, is personal relationships, personal and romantic, familial relationships. It's something I've really had to work on over the last few years because of some personal development issues, some of my own insecurities manifesting in physical form, lots of different issues I've had to kind of counteract and work on. But what I've realized was, when you're very clear on the end goal, you stop doing things that move you away from that end goal. And in the context of, say, familial relationships, I've spoken about this in the mindset section of my book, The Fitness Mindset, and I'll be speaking about it in the book coming out probably later next year, that, again, my mother, my daughter, my inner circle of people, the people closest to me, I always prioritize my time with them. And they get priority. I have my daddy-daughter day every week with my daughter because that relationship is more important to me than any other. So I prioritize it. And if other things come up, which happens all the fucking time, where somebody be like, look, can you come and do this talk on, you know, this Saturday or whatever it is? And, you know, things may have fallen. And sometimes they're super, like, to be honest, I'm very fortunate. Sometimes they're very well-paid opportunities. And they'll fall on a daddy-daughter day and I can't change it to the Friday or the Sunday because of other prior commitments. And I just have to say no. And that's because I'm very aware with my North Star and of what I want and what is really important to me. And I'm not saying that that's what you have to do, but get clear on what is important to you. Because when you know that, it makes it very easy to say no to everything else. And I spoke in the mindset section of the fitness mindset that when you're making decisions, if you can make them as either a hell yes, if they're not a hell yes, they're a no. That's the only way to overlap it with making better decisions. Because if you're not all in and it doesn't feed into the end goal, then every step you take is moving you further away. James Swanwick had a really good piece of advice for anyone that struggles with, say, romantic relationships. James is in his early 40s and has done a lot of work on the romantic relationship side of his life because he's a very successful entrepreneur, worked with ESPN, has interviewed some of the world's most successful people from Will Smith to David Beckham to Jennifer Lopez, but struggled in that romantic relationship side because he couldn't prioritize it, nor did he want to at the time. And he spoke that when he's going on dates now with people, they have certain criteria that they need to fit. And if it's not going to line up with what he wants in a partner, he doesn't even take the first step on the ladder. And that got me thinking on the non-negotiables that I have with people. You know, I apply it in different areas of my life. But what's non-negotiable for you? What are the things that, yes, if I do that, it's definitely going to work against what I want. You know, if I want a boyfriend or a girlfriend or a husband or a wife or a life partner, or whatever it is going on a date with somebody half my age or going on, you know, a date with somebody that reminds me of all my ex-boyfriends or ex-girlfriends in the past who haven't worked out and you're literally just repeating the same pattern. If you're taking that first step on the ladder, then you deserve to deal with the problem that comes out the other side. And a quote that I regularly use on the podcast is, if you don't deal with a problem when it's small enough to be solved, you deserve to deal with the fuck up that comes when it grows. And that's kind of how I feel when I take the first step towards things that don't really help me. And when you get very clear on what success means for you, you know, I break my life into four quadrants. You may have heard me speak about this in the past on health, wealth, love, and fulfillment. So my health, my physical health, my mental health, my health, wealth, my bank account, my wealth, never having to worry about paying bills, my love, my personal relationships, familial relationships, romantic relationships, and fulfillment. The things that make me tap dance to work, that make me jump out of bed every morning, writing books, doing podcasts, having impact. And when I come back, I score those four quadrants out of 10, and then I generally just audit what one needs the most work. And again, it varies at different times in my life, which one takes the most priority. But I'm a big believer that you have to be able to quantify your life in some way, and what gets measured gets managed. And when you don't know how well you're doing, and you don't, say for me, I work with numbers very easily, 1 to 10, how well am I doing in this part of my life right now? How good is my health right now? Is it at a 9? Am I feeling physically great? Am I mentally very good? Okay, I'm at a 9, let's strive for a 10. But my, you know, love maybe at a 6 because I'm not in a romantic relationship, or, you know, you've had a fight with a loved one, or you've been working too much and you haven't been able to prioritize family time, and you're like, okay, I'm at a 5 or a 6 there. For me, I'm able to quantify it and I can see what needs work. It's effectively like, you know, your weighing scale or your body fat calipers when you're trying to see how your body's responding. And for me, I use it because Warren Buffett regularly, who owns Berkshire Hathaway, he's repeatedly one of the world's richest people, will say that if you don't know the score, if you're not counting and you're not seeing how you're doing and you don't know the score and you can't see the scoreboard, then you don't know if you're winning or losing. And that's how I feel about it. So I generally come back and map it that way. But what it also does is it gets you very clear on decisions that you're making. And if, for me, making decisions, and I'll share it just because it supports me and hopefully it'll provide value if it resonates and lands. When I'm making any decision in any area of my life, personal life, romantic life, business life, fitness life, if it doesn't move the needle in one of those four quadrants, it's a no. If it does, it's a hell yes. And I go all in on it and I commit to it. Because on the other side of commitment is happiness. And when I do that, it normally helps. So over the last year, when I got very clear on the things that I really want to focus on, so the podcast, which is something that's been growing month on month over the last year, probably with the combination of some of the guests, combination of you listening, telling your friends, or putting it on your Instagram stories, or leaving reviews. A combination of a lot of things, but it's been a primary focus for me because it's my favorite thing that I'm doing at the minute. That in combination with writing. So getting the first draft edited for my new book, which will be out, it'll probably be late next year realistically, because I have a quite a long writing process. And then speaking, which is something that I've been doing a lot of over the month of December. I did my two business seminars and a fitness seminar and a lot of corporate speaking over November and December. And that's something that I'll be expanding into in January and February and when I come back from the Arctic even, because it is something that I love doing. And it moves those areas of my life forward because it's what I love to do and what I would do for free. And when you're able to make decisions, and I spoke about this in the random episode with Paul Germany, that I make decisions based out of, would I do this for free? If the answer is yes, then I take payment first. That's how I decide the people I work with. That's how I decide what speaking appearances I do. That's how I decide on any decision that I make. Because when I was struggling for a long period of time because of the opportunities coming my way, in a very fortunate position, high in the fucking first world problems here, but I was having so many opportunities coming my way and I wasn't able to filter through them. And, you know, sponsorships, or people wanted to do affiliates, or people wanted to do some link up, and I didn't have a filtering system set up, so I didn't know what to say yes and no to. So what I effectively came down to over the last 18 months, particularly over the last year, was, if I'll do this for free, then I'll take payment first. So I have a non-negotiable speaking fee. I have a non-negotiable, you know, whatever appearance I'm doing. I have a non-negotiable sponsorships on the podcast. I have a lot of non-negotiables that this is the fee, this is the price. And I base it off, would I do this for free? And that's how I decide the people that I work with. Again, I'm not saying that's what you should do in if you're working in business or you're working for yourself. That's just the way that I make decisions. But it also helps to kind of clarify some of the ideas on when making decisions that you need to be all in on them, and they need to be kind of labors of love. And when you're doing things that you really love to do, it never feels like work, but you have to get those few things right. You've got to get very clear on how you're quantifying the results, on how you're tracking the success metrics, on what's your scoreboard. What do you need to do in order to hit this end goal? Who do you need to be around in order to feel happier and to feel more secure and to feel better? And start reverse engineering that, working that backwards. So that's something I've learned over the last year that I think will be very prevalent coming into next year. The next one then is, the sauna is incredible for mental health. And this is one that kind of took me by surprise, because it was very much an indirect finding through training for the marathon to Saab, because I was trying to get my body used to the temperature, because the Sahara Desert can get upwards of, you know, 40 to 50 degrees. I was doing a lot of sauna work in preparation for that event, and it was conditioning my body for the heat. But what I started to find was my mood was massively improved off the back of the sauna. And when I started to look into the science behind it, and I tend to nerd out and geek out a small bit on these things, but I was very curious to what was happening, because I would go into the sauna, and even if it was only a short bout of 10, 15 minutes, I would come out and I would feel really clear headed, and I would feel my mood to be elevated, and I would just felt like really, really good, for the lack of a better term. And I wanted to know why. So I started to look into the science behind it, and the, you know, the heat stress pathways that are created when you're putting your body under heat stress, the effects on brain neurotrophic factor, where you're thinking clearer, and the parts of your brain that get activated through heat response. And when I experimented with this and kept it into my daily routine, and then removed it, because to do any real test or experiment, you kind of have to remove the stimulus that you think is affecting you in a positive or negative way and see if it works or not. So for a couple of weeks, I dropped the sauna and let go of it and just effectively stopped using it completely to see if it was placebo effect, and it wasn't. And again, a lot of the hard science is coming up now. Dr. Rhonda Patrick is really good with this. It was actually her podcasts on Found My Fitness, I think her podcast name is, and the reports that she was linking up on the effects of sauna with Dr. Mercola, I think is the other doctor that has a lot of work on this in terms of infrared saunas. And when I had Michaela Peterson on the podcast, Jordan Peterson's daughter, talking about the carnivore diet and her autoimmune issues, she spoke a lot about the effects of sauna on her health and her gut and how she felt so much better. And it made me research it even further. And if you're someone that, I don't want to say and classify this as someone that struggles with mental health, because I think anybody could benefit from this. Like, there's a lot of longevity studies being done on the heat response and the heat stress pathways that are basically being affected by putting your body into a stress response, and the heat shock proteins have been in a stress response of elevation in core temperature through the sauna, through infrared sauna, or just through heat in general. And I would definitely experiment with it. If you can get to a sauna in a gym, just play around. Go in one of the days when you have to just clear your head, or you're feeling a bit low, or you're feeling a bit down, or you get SADS, you know, seasonal affective disorder, where a lack of vitamin D affects your mood negatively. Try going into the sauna. Try doing 10 to 15 minutes in a hot sauna and just see how your mood feels when you come out. This is something I spoke about on my GA podcast, that when I was speaking about ice baths and steam rooms and saunas, and the science is still pretty new and relatively new for the most part. So I'll be keeping an eye on it as going forward. But from an anecdotal point of view and from personal effect, I've noticed a huge difference. And this, again, is something that I'll be keeping throughout 2019, because it's been a game changer for me, when it's just another added way of improving mood, improving cognitive enhancement in terms of decision making, because you're not clouded with emotion and not clouded with all these thoughts in your head. Like, when you're in a sauna, shit gets fucking hot, and you're in a sauna and like 10 minutes in, 11 minutes in, like, if you're in a hot enough sauna, you forget your fucking name, and you come out and then you have a cold shower for, you know, 30 seconds, and you're like, oh, you just get this wave of like wellness. So I would recommend experimenting with it. And it's something that completely came out of left field this year, because I had no thoughts coming into 2018 on playing around with sauna and heat. But in the lead up to the desert, it kind of worked off a byproduct, and it's something I'll be keeping. I've also been doing a lot of work with cold. So I have a ice bath also in my house, which is very effective. I've been doing a lot of Wim Hof breathing and trying to increase my body's ability to work in cold conditions coming into the Arctic. I also find a little bit of a mental health boost from that. Also, you're so fucking happy to get out of the cold bath after 5 or 10 minutes. So that also helps. But I will be putting more on that definitely on the podcast or on my Instagram stories in the new year as I get heavy into the Arctic Circle training. So definitely stay tuned on my Instagram for more on that. The last thing I learned this year then was, book writing helps you work your shit out, and you fucking see how crazy you really are. And it's funny, because I had James Smith on the podcast earlier in the year, and he was speaking about his emails, his daily emails, where when he's writing out his thoughts, it's very cathartic for him, where he's getting all his ideas and all his extra amount of thoughts in his head out onto the paper or out onto the keyboard, and he feels a mental release when he does that. I also feel something very similar with podcasts, particularly when I do solo episodes where I just have a topic like dealing with mental health or motivation is fucking bullshit or whatever episode I've done where I've literally just pressed record and talked. And book writing is very similar, and I'm going to flesh this out to try and provide value, because some of you listening, you'll be like, yeah, fuck, I've got a book in me, I want to write a book. And if you do, you should start writing. And any tips I offer people to write a book is to fucking write. As simple as that sounds, it's the hardest thing to do. There's a great book by Stephen Pressfield on the war of art, which talks about the resistance that comes when you're writing and the difficulties that come, particularly like the second day or the second week or the second month when the initial steam runs, when the initial motivation runs out, and how to push through that. It's an incredible book. That, in combination with Stephen King's book titled On Writing, are probably the two best ones that I've consumed that have helped me with writing my books, writing blogs, etc. But what I would advise is even if you have no plan to write a book, start journaling or start writing or blogging, even if you never post it anywhere, because you'd be so surprised how quickly you start to work shit out and you realize how fucked up you are. Like, the more I go through life and the older I get and every year that passes and the more self-aware I become, I realize that everybody's fucked up, just everyone's fucked up in their own different ways, and myself, and I'm right in there in that bracket and probably top of that fucking ladder. And everybody has their shit. Everybody has their demons. Everybody has their biases. Everyone has their experiences that have made a fucking mess of them and make them see the world in a certain way. Everybody has that, positive, negative, or neutral. And as you get older, or I can't speak for anybody else, but as I get older and the more people that I meet, I realize that everybody's fucking crazy and everybody's fucking messed up. It's just relative in terms of the degree in which people are messed up and how negatively or positively affects their life. You know, you can very quickly turn a negative thing into a positive thing depending on the perspective that you give it. You know, like how many people... Oprah Winfrey is one of the examples I always come to. Somebody that was repeatedly raped and molested as a teenager, had several miscarriages, has gone on to become one of the most successful people in the world. She's a fucking inspiration. And somebody like that, turning negative, she's like, it's fuel. It's fucking fuel. She goes, I remember where I came from and I remember where I was, and I use that to make me move forward and give back and make the world better. Like, that is perspective. That's using negative and using obstacles as stepping stones to get to where you want to be. And not wallowing in self-pity and living a victim and being the victim. And I've spoken on this from my personal experience of going through too much of my life as a victim and constantly blaming the world for all the fucking things that were wrong in my life, not realizing that everything that's wrong in my life is my fault. All of it. Every fucked up relationship, every bad decision, every issue that I've ever had, my fault. Doesn't matter if it happened externally, didn't matter if someone beat the fucking shit out of you, didn't matter if somebody said you or called you this name or did that, it's you, because you're interjecting perspective on what the words and the attachments that you're giving to the words or the emotion of the situation that happened. That's on you. You can own that shit, and when you own it, you can control it, and when you control it, you can change it. And book writing or journaling helps you work a lot of that shit out. Stuff that you didn't even realize was there. And for me, it kind of removes a cloud and gets you to kind of tap into it. And that in combination with running has also helped me do that, because when I'm doing longer runs, particularly the ones that really challenge me, like I'm 85 kilos, 5'8", like I still carry quite a bit of muscle. I'm not built to run fucking 70 kilometers. And you know, nearly double marathon time. And when my body starts to go past that marathon distance, either in ultra marathon events or when I'm doing my own runs, your demons start to come up. And all the insecurities that you have start to fucking come up. And that negative voice of stop, 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 you can't do it, you're not good enough, they start to come to the forefront. And it kind of ties into the suffering is good. And when you can get control of that voice, you're able to use it as fuel for the fire. And you can repeat a mantra that makes you stronger. You know, like I used to have words, I've got my trigger words that I've spoken about on other podcasts, you know, stupid, weak, words that were used in my childhood, words that were used when I was growing up, words that came from people who were supposed to provide you with the security to make you a better version. But you get those words and you repeat those mantras and you turn them around. When I was running 76 kilometers in an ultra marathon through Barcelona, I was fucking broken after the marathon distance because of the terrain. And I just remember those words of people calling me stupid. I would repeat the mantra, I'm not fucking stupid, I'm smart. And I would remember when people called me fucking weak and told me I wouldn't be good enough. And I would repeat the mantra, I'm not weak, I am strong, I am worthy. And you just repeat that over and over again until that becomes your automatic thought process. And you condition your mind. Realize that all those negative thoughts and all those fucking words and all those trigger words that make you feel insecure, and then you project it outwards into other people, or worse, you suppress it and bury it down and make you fucking feel worse about yourself, and you just repeat that pattern. The more you do that, the more habitual it becomes. And when you realize that those fucking words, you didn't put them there, somebody else put them there. Someone called you fat. Someone called you stupid. Someone called you ugly. Someone called you not good enough. Someone called you weak. Somebody put those fucking words there. They didn't get there by themselves. And when you realize that, you're able to take back control of it and realize that that's not the truth. That was an opinion of a person close to me. That was an opinion of somebody that said that word when I was a teenager. Or, you know, even now, if you're dealing with those insecurities in adulthood, they were words that were put there by somebody else. take fucking ownership of them and realize that they're opinions. They're not facts. And when you separate facts from opinions, you realize that everything's an opinion. It was somebody else's fucking opinion and now it's become your own. And beliefs are just opinions that have been hammered in over and over again. And if you want to change a belief, you got to get to the fucking root of the opinion and realize that that's all you have. Your belief system that you're not good enough, you're not worthy enough, you can't do it, you're not smart enough, is an opinion that's been hammered in over and over again. You don't need to hold on to that because you've decided to constantly reinforce that opinion until it became a belief, and then it makes it very difficult. I spoke in the fitness mindset that words and opinions are like seeds, that they're pretty easy to dig up in the beginning, but if you let them grow for 10, 20 years, it's a lot fucking harder to dig up a full-grown oak tree. That's what happens with beliefs. They all start as opinions. Opinions are the seeds, and your beliefs grow into oak trees the more you hammer in and the more time you give to that opinion. If you feel you can't do something, if you feel you have something that's holding you back, realize that it's up to you to fucking change it. The beauty of this is the thing with an oak tree. You're not a fucking tree. If you don't like where you are, move. That it comes with making that decision. And when you journal and when you push yourself past the point of discomfort, for my example, when I'm running and I'm either journaling in the morning or particularly writing the book over the past few months and more going into 2019, you start to realize how crazy you are. You start to realize how fucked up your shit is. But you also start to realize that it's all on you to change it. And nobody's going to make that change unless you do. You have to make the decision. And everything starts with the decision that you make. Everything starts with the initial thought in your head. Because the thoughts that you have lead to the actions that you take. And the actions you take will dictate where your life goes. If there's a problem, go back to the root of the source. That's your fucking thinking. You can change all the external things you want. You can buy the new car. You can get a fucking awesome body. You can run a sub 3-hour marathon. You can do all these fucking external things that make you feel successful or make you look successful. But unless you change your fucking thinking, none of it works. It's a band-aid for the problem. And you can put everything over it. And then you just doing or you keep acquiring things that you think are going to make you feel better. You think are going to make you feel more confident. You think are going to make you feel more secure. And I'm speaking as someone that fucking did this. I did it all. And the more you do it, you realize that, what the fuck? I'm doing the same thing over and over again and expecting a different result. And you can only get punched in the face so often before you realize, why is my fucking nose sore? And you can't do the same thing over and over again and expect a different result. If you're not happy with where you are, and you're not secure, or you're not confident, you don't feel you deserve it, or whatever story you've told yourself up until now, you have to own that and realize that nobody's going to change it until you do. And over the last year of writing, it's really allowed me to articulate it more in words, and I'm sure it'll get more articulated as the months go by and as I work into the second draft. But it's really allowed me to share that back. And again, I'm not sure if it provides value. And I never know. I never know with topics like this when I go off on kind of tangents and rants. I never know if it's going to help. But what I do know is it normally helps at least one person. And the reason I just fucking fly off the handle, one, I don't give a shit. Like, what comes back from it, I'm like, oh, fuck it. This is my podcast. I'm going to say what I want. But the reason, jokes aside, is that I share it is because if it hits one person, and it was normally me that I need to hit. I always kind of aim at the message when I go off on these rants or tangents. They're normally aimed at a younger me because there were messages I needed to hear. And the older I get and the more people I meet and the more fucked up I realize how everybody is, we're all kind of fucked up for different reasons. But it normally comes back to some root cause of something that's happened to you, some fucking trauma you're dealing with, some insecurity that you have, some issues with confidence, whatever it is. We all have it in some area of our life. And that's become more profound over the last year, I've noticed it more over the last year as I've talked to more people in different areas, that we're all fucked up. We're all crazy. Just we've all got our own different ways of dealing with it. But one that I found has helped me has been writing it down and getting those ideas out there in combination with challenging myself physically to the point of where I don't think I can do it anymore. That tends to support me a lot with working through some of those demons. And you may not have a demon. You may have a small one. You may have a fucking huge one. doesn't matter, but working through whatever of your area of your life that you're not happy with, because you can change it. That's the beauty of not being a fucking oak tree. You're not stuck where you are. If you're not happy with something in your physical body, in your relationship, in your finances, in your job, you can change it. It may not change overnight, and most good things that happen don't change overnight. But it comes with making the decision. It comes with altering your thoughts and the way that you're seeing it. And then your actions will change as a result. And as your actions change, you're going to form different daily habits and make different decisions every day. Tell me what you do every day and I'll tell you where you'll be in a year. But it comes back with making a decision and going back to the source and realizing that every belief you have is just an opinion that's been hammered in there day after day, week after week, month after month, year after year. And if you want to change it, you got to go back to the source and change it. But book writing, it helps you work your shit out. So I recommend it. Write a book, write a blog, write a journal, keep a journal, make some notes, do something, you know, record a podcast and never post it. Record a video on your phone, never post it. Just get it out of your head. A lot of the times, those anxieties and stressors that are just welling up in your head, when you put them on paper or put them on a screen, makes you feel better. I don't know the science of how that works. I just know as someone that has used it anecdotally that it helps. So hopefully that, with intermittent fasting, suffering being good, how work doesn't really feel like work if you get a couple of things right, and how the sauna in combination with book writing may help you and support you in your journey into 2019. These are the new things that I learned this year. So I hope they help. And as I said, this was another one of these episodes. I've got four notes in front of me and I just talked kind of as it came to my head, and I hope it's provided value. If it's your first time listening, thank you so much for joining the podcast. I hope to provide you as much value in 2019, and definitely go back and check some of the older episodes in 2018. Most of the ones that I've done are evergreen, so they're applicable year round. And if you're a long time listener, have a happy new year. You're a fucking legend for listening to the podcast. Thank you for DMing or tagging me on your Instagram stories or leaving reviews or passing it on to your friends. That's literally the best thing I can ever hear. So without further ado, thank you all. Happy new year from Brian Keane Podcast.